This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
You're listening to John 94.9. It is time for Sunday Arts Magazine once again. Hello, David Hunt.
Hello, Brendan Bale.
How are you?
Very well, thank you.
That's good to hear.
Well, how could you not be this time of the year?
Oh, my gosh.
All of a sudden, winter's... We're at the end of it, and the days are starting to become really quite pleasant.
We've had a wonderful weekend already.
Yeah.
And I was out in the park today, catching up with my lovely Uncle Bill.
Oh, Uncle Bill.
Uncle Bill down from the Gold Coast.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
been very lucky. He would have been complaining about the weather, though, was he?
No, he was loving it.
Okay.
He's kind of built for the winter anyway, so he loves
it. Okay.
But, yeah, really turned it out today, so it was wonderful to spend a bit of time in the park and some yummy food from near the art centres.
Right, lovely.
Very, very happy. Now, it's been a big week for me. And you've had a bit of a busy week as well, David, haven't you?
Yes, yes. But it's always a busy week. Go on, you go first, because we always start with film.
We do. Well, we had the massive rally yesterday for marriage equality, which was wonderful.
Yeah, and we were both there, but we didn't see each other.
No, we didn't.
There were a lot of people marching.
There were a lot of people, and one of the people that got to speak at the State Library when they had the speeches there was director Maya Newell, who directed Gaby Baby.
Right.
Who also did the documentary series Growing Up Gaby about herself, and we sort of previewed the film. I went to go see it sort of the end of last week.
Yeah, and it's part of the film festival.
It's part of the film festival. Yep. We were so busy last week we didn't get to speak about it. So, wonderful film. And she had some very inspiring words yesterday at the rally. Just talking about same-sex families and, hopefully things are going in the right direction now. Of course, there's a big roadblock at the moment, but I think people power is going to win out in the end.
Yeah.
There's already pressure. You know, it's making the pollies crack at the moment. So,
well, yes. I just can't believe what happened last week in Canberra. And the fact is that what's coming out now is that it's not as all sugar and spice and everything nice as what our leader told us. It's very, very much a different story than that.
It certainly is. And, keep the pressure up.
Yes.
I mentioned my new because MIF, and it's such a wonderful thing. And closing night, I should say, was on last night.
Oh, okay.
I missed out on going to that, unfortunately, but I was there in spirit. And American Mistress was the final film by Noah Baumbach. So I unfortunately missed that one, but hopefully that one will kind of get through to cinemas quite quickly.
And what was the chatter? Has it been a successful film festival?
Well, from all reports, yes. And, from me as an audience member, every screening that I went to, bar one, was completely sold out.
Wow.
So that's pretty damn impressive, if I do say so myself. And my hot tip is get in early next year. If there is a film that you really want to see or a bunch of films you want to see, really get in quickly because standby is not really what you want to do.
Yeah, well, I tried standby with Holding the Man and they no hope.
No.
But the thing is, how do you know sometime? You've got to do a lot of research, really, don't you, to find out. And a lot of people are time poor. And so, therefore, it's word of mouth is what people need to find out. So, in a way... It really does make it hard to actually go and see some. But then it's part of a festival, so you see it, and then hopefully it's released soon, like Holding the Man is, only a few weeks after the film festival.
Yeah, very, very excited with that one. And I finally finished the book this week and, got a bit emotional about it.
Yeah.
It's a very, it's an emotional book. Mm. So I'm very much looking forward to it. And I could have gone to a media screening on Friday morning, but I think it's probably a good thing that I missed out on that because I feel like I did need maybe a little bit of time between finishing the book and then seeing the film, maybe let it sort of sink in a little bit more.
Yeah.
So, But getting to two of my favourite films, there's so much to talk about with MIFF, and I did see a lot of films, but two of the standouts, yep. One of them I got to see on Friday night, my last film of the festival, so it's wonderful that I left on such a high note, but Me and Earl and the Dying Girl.
Love the name.
Great title, and, you know, it really should be a sad, you know, depressing film, but it's hilarious. It's, you know, it does have that emotional core as well, but I don't think I've laughed that much in a film at the cinema in such a long time. So it kind of runs the gamut of emotions. And I sort of made friends with a lady sitting directly next to me before the film, and we were both a mess by the end of it.
Right,
so
okay.
Kind of slink out and, you know, dry the tears.
Yeah, well, that's interesting that you said you made friends with the person sitting next to you, because that also happened with one of the docos you went to about a week or so ago, didn't it? You were telling me about
docos, and then another horror film as well that I saw, a thriller called The Invitation.
Yep.
And you know, started conversation with the person next to me. Well, they started conversation with me,
which is a rarity, because normally you go and see a film where you don't speak to people, or you're not sitting that close to people, unless it's the big blockbuster films, and that's a different kettle of fish, because it's not your normal movie goer when you really think about it. So that's another reason to go in film festivals, because you do actually speak to people sitting around you, because you've all got a common interest,
and you know, you're experiencing the film. It is quite a different feel to just going to the cinema, you know, for a general screening.
Yeah,
you know, everyone wants to be there, and they're there for the love of film,
yes,
rather than just filling the time. So yeah, it's no surprise that people do connect on that audience level, and I think it's lovely. It's wonderful that people can talk about film, because, you know, it is a medium that doesn't just stop. You know, once you've seen it, it lives on afterwards. And that's why we talk about films 50 years down the track, because if they're good enough, they do become part of the public vernacular.
Yep,
so,
popular culture they become.
So, you know, hats off to MIFF. They try to balance between sort of mainstream films that are kind of the crowd pleasers that are getting a lot of people in, but then you've also got the genre films, you've got the smaller films, you've got the queer films popping up, and as we mentioned the week before, they've sort of taken over almost this year, which is fantastic. You know, I'm sure that won't happen every year, but, you know, there really is that sort of spectrum of things that will hopefully please everyone. So, you know, even if you get to see one or two great films, you're talking about it with your friends and giving them recommendations, and that's what I love doing. Yeah. I love putting it on Facebook, and I love sort of telling people and having the conversations about it. And even a workmate, she went and saw the same film as me, but a different session, and just that sort of conversation that springs from that was wonderful, and, you know, to see if you actually like it or not.
Yep.
Now, we were lucky enough to talk to the lovely Grant Shikluna last week about his film Downriver.
That's right.
And, you know, biased it might be, but it was my other highlight of the festival. And I guess I'd sort of pumped it up in my head a lot, so, you know, I put expectations on it, but it really did live up to them. So that was quite surprising.
What's it called again?
Downriver.
Right, okay. And that's getting a general release soon, isn't it?
Yeah, quite soon, hopefully. Right. And then, well, they're going to do an international festival circuit, and then hopefully get the release through Rialto. So,
right.
I think it's going to do quite well in general release, hopefully.
Excellent.
You know, you wouldn't call it one of those mainstream crowd-pleasing kind of films, but it's an important film, and I think it should be seen by as many audiences as possible, which is no guarantees, but fingers crossed on that one. But, you know, they're my two ones. I'll hopefully get into some more films in a little bit into the show.
Okay.
Well, we do have a lot to get through today.
And we do.
I did mention that you had gone to see something. You'd been busy this week. So you went and saw something last night, didn't you, David?
I did, actually. The production company, which I have a lot of time for because I love musical theatre. And the production company, for those people that don't know about it, it's run by Ginny Pratt. She heads it. And there's a gamut of people that are involved in it. But what they do is they put on musical theatre, some of the biggest names. Like, their first one for this year was West Side Story, the classic, and they do three each year, and Jerry's Girl is the final one. But the middle one this year, and what it is, it's a short run. It's only for 10 or 12 days, 15 days tops, and it's at the Art Centre in the State Theatre. The orchestra is always great. The talent's amazing, and it's talent that have a chance to play leading roles that they normally wouldn't get to play a leading role in some of these musicals if they came out by one of the big companies. And what they're doing is fostering new talent and giving a platform for some of the older, the veterans of the business as well, who don't want to go on tour for 6 months or whatever, that want to do, you know, still want to keep a hand in doing it. And this one here is a very unique one because it's the first time it's actually been played outside of America. Which is brilliant that a production company have got this. And they do it on a shoestring budget. You know, there's not the grand sets, but their sets are always great. Costumes are always brilliant. And as I said, the cast is incredible. And ensemble casts are just brilliant, the chorus. But this one is called Nice Work If You Can Get It. And it's Gershwin's song, and it's Gershwin's music. And what they've done here is that they've actually gone back and chosen all songs of Gershwin and made it into a new play, which is only fairly recent. As I said, it's only just finished in America, and Melbourne is the only place outside of America that's got it. It's roughly from a play that was around in Gershwin's days called OK, but they've modernised it enough. It's set in the Roaring Twenties, which is great, and the music just fits in beautifully. And it's Prohibition, so it was all of that. And what a wonderful time it would have been in America in that era. And the segue to the songs is brilliant, a lot more so than what they did back then. And the jokes are more relevant now as well. So, you know, it's just really good. I didn't come across one person last night that said, yeah. Everyone said brilliant. And Jeannie Pratt at the end, they always have little speeches on opening night. And she said, I say at every show we do that it's the best. This one is the best. And the crowd went crazy because it really was good. Tell you what, the guy that played the lead, Rowan Brown, he's just so good. He's got a good singing voice, a very good actor, an amazing dancer, dances with such ease, the way he just kicks his heels the way they would have done in the 20s and all that. I was just blown away with how good he was. Christy Whelan Brown, who is very well known in musical theatre scenes around, she played the Olivia role in Xanadu on roller skates quite a few years ago. It was one of the first times I saw her, and she was fairly new then. She plays this really ditzy role. It's fantastic. Gina Riley is hysterical in it. She is really good, as you could imagine, and she's got a great singing voice, which a lot of people are surprised. And then there's John Wood as well, who's part of the cast. And such a strong cast. Everyone performs like ridiculously well. It's a treat. It's only on for about 10 days. I'm not sure. And the music fits beautifully. John Foreman is conducting the orchestra, and the orchestra features so heavily, as they always do. They're on set for the whole show. It's a damn good show. I'd actually give it 5 out of 5 stars.
Fantastic.
That's how good it is. So go and see it, as I said, because it's limited, and it's the only time you're going to see it outside of America at this stage anyway. And Matthew Broderick played the lead role in America on Broadway. So that's how good it is. And the music, you just sit there and the segue, sometimes the audience giggles because the segue is so beautiful to go into the next song that they do. And so my foot was tapping all night long. It was just a treat. So so go and check it out.
You've heard it here first.
Yes, you've heard it
here Sunday
first.
Sunday Arts Magazine. David and Brendan with you. We'll be back. We're talking more about, well, things that we've been up to, really, here on Sunday Arts Magazine on Joy 94.9.
Joy.
Taking the vow, it's nice work if you can get it, and you can get it, won't you tell me? Please, please tell me.
That was Kimber Griffith and Ryan Griffith. Nice work if you can get it here on Joy 94.9. It is Sunday Arts Magazine. Brendan with you, and I'm joined by...
Who? Oh, me. Yeah, David Hunt.
It is. Now, we've got a couple of messages in. Do you want to go through those, David?
Yes, I will. And we'll start with Kerry. She's a lovely girl. No, Kerry, I know you're a boy. Kerry actually was a volunteer here at Joy, but also I got to meet him, and I'm a good friend of his on social media, enjoying the show, but making me jealous. The one reason I miss Melbourne is the many great shows on there. Love and Kisses from Sunny and Warm.
Okay,
yeah, whatever.
We're catching
Kerry.
Up. We've had at least a couple of good days.
So. We have, yes. You're like, it's turning here, so shut up. So we were talking about the rally yesterday, yeah, and the fact that up north a little bit, not far, where it's a lot colder, that nothing much has happened with marriage equality. But the whole thing is true. As we don't know who this person is, though, do we?
No.
Do you want to read this one?
If I can pronounce this word, a recalcitrant PM is challenging,
yes,
but great for creative arts projects and theatre plays.
Yeah.
So anything creative, of course, there is always that that backlash from the creative industry. You know, when it is under pressure, that sort of counterculture. So yep, it is this weird thing that, you know, when you have someone in that's so divisive, some really great content comes out of that.
Absolutely. But unfortunately, a lot of funding's being cut too.
Well, that makes it even harder, doesn't it?
Which makes it really hard. Mm. And talking about funding cuts, they don't seem to have a problem because they do such amazing things. Who have we got in the studio?
What a segue.
And look at the aura coming out of his body. Oh, my God. He's so important.
We have the lovely Dale Ball. Oh, my God. I can't even say it. Baltrop. We got their concert master from MSO, the wonderful MSO. Always impressed by what they do. So, Dale, tell us a little bit about how you got involved with MSO to begin with, and what is your background?
Sure. Well, first of all, thanks for having me on. It's great to
Very
be
well.
Here.
Pleasure, and lovely to meet the orchestra as well.
Yes.
Instead of, and that's what's so nice, that they're involving everyone from the orchestra these days, aren't they?
Right.
With interviews.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the musicians really are the heart of the orchestra.
Of course you are.
And we're the ones that our Melbourne audiences get to know week in, week out.
Absolutely.
And so I think there's a real emphasis on putting the musicians really out in the community and getting to know people, which is wonderful.
Yep.
And myself being quite new to the Melbourne Symphony.
How long have you been here?
This is my second year
as a newbie
concertmaster.
Yeah.
And it's been absolutely terrific. I'm really enjoying it,
right,
and enjoying getting to know all of our audiences and supporters and some new faces along the way.
And where are you from?
I'm from Brisbane originally.
Okay.
So I grew up.
Got the climate wise, because Brendan's from that neck of the wood as well.
Yes, I'm from the Gold Coast, but we won't go into that.
Well, you know, you're a Queenslander, and that's all that counts. No, I had a wonderful upbringing in Brisbane, where they have one of the best state school instrumental music programs in the country, if not the world. And
that's something I had no idea about.
Oh, absolutely. And I was very fortunate because learning a musical instrument was made available to me at a very young age. In grade 3, I started on the violin.
Wow.
And my parents didn't have to pay a cent, at least not for lessons.
Yep.
then a few years later, when they found out how much violins tend to cost,
yes,
they were thinking, uh-oh, what have we got ourselves in for?
So what happened? You started at that very young age, and then we all grow up and our lives change so much, and we want to sort of run away from stuff we did as little, or that we're being pushed into by parents or teachers. Mm-hmm. You obviously didn't?
No, you know, I was obsessed with music.
Oh, good on you.
Ever since I was born, ever since I was old enough to comprehend musical sounds, I wanted to only play with musical toys, and it just, that obsession grew. I don't think I ever really considered doing anything else with my life.
Okay.
And I feel very fortunate in that regard.
Right.
The path was laid out. It was certainly not an easy path. I had to,
well, I was going to say that,
work my butt off.
Yeah, it's bloody hard work, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, all the study you have to do.
Yeah. But it's such a joy when you love doing what you're doing.
Right.
And you know, we all feel that way when we're doing something that we love. Work becomes much more of your passion and your life's path.
Yeah. Now you're involved with Montreal. You've
Vancouver.
Vancouver.
Yes.
But you also spent 5 years in the US. Is that right?
Well, actually, I've been in North America for a total of about 17 years at this point. I went over when I was 18 to study at the University of Maryland, just out of Washington, D.C. Spent 4 years there, spent a year in Cleveland, Ohio, which boasts one of the great orchestras of the world.
Oh, wow.
And then I got my first job in St. Paul, Minnesota, as the principal second violinist of the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra. Talk about pretty much as far removed from Brisbane as you could possibly get, especially in terms of weather. They have the most brutal winters, but it was great. A really lovely art scene there.
But in terms of the industry, you know, how does the USA compare to Australia in terms of, I guess, nurturing younger talent and having a trajectory into an actual career?
Well, it's a very different scene over there. I mean, it's obviously a lot more people, and so I think it's more difficult for the music community in the US to establish kind of a national scene like we have here. The Australian musical community is very tight, and that I think is especially fostered by the work of the Australian Youth Orchestra and all of our wonderful youth orchestras around the country that feed into the AYO. And so I think that there is a real sense of community that we have here in Australia that perhaps is lacking in the US, just because of the fact that there's just so many cities that have all got their things going on.
And from your perspective, does that sort of make you want to give back to the community in Australia as well? And yeah. How do you sort of do that? How do you create that?
I've been very fortunate in that I've been coming back to Australia for many years now. I've taught at the National Music Camp. I've taught at the Australian National Academy of Music here in Melbourne and done various other projects with both the ACO and the MSO. And, yeah, I do feel a real sense of duty to the music scene in this country. It's absolutely incredible. And what many people don't realize overseas is just how rich our music scene is.
Yeah. Now, we'll come back. We've got to talk about why you're mainly here, the new season, 2016
yes.
season.
Yes.
You're on Joy 94.9. It is Sunday Arts Magazine with David and Brendan.
Joy.
You are on Joy 94.9, Sunday Arts Magazine, taking you through till 5 p.m. where that crazy man comes in.
Yeah.
Solo
talk about
today.
Crazy.
Now,
he's not out there. He can't be putting his fist up at us.
So do stick around for Robert yesterday once more at 5 p.m. And we didn't thank Andy as well. So big thank you to Andy and Murray, if you are still listening out there. But we're on to other things now. We've got the lovely Dale Baltrop.
Well done.
Oh, got it.
You nailed it.
David, from the MSO. And we weren't going to let you go without talking about everything new that's coming up. And I'm going to ask you about specific ones very soon. But can you give us a little bit of an overview of, you know, what's coming up in the current season or the new season?
Yes, well, it's very exciting. We've just announced, and I think there are some really, there was basically something for everyone in this season.
That's what I love about the MSO now, and I think orchestras around the world are doing it because they have to, because they've got to get bums on seats at the end of the day.
Yep.
But there really is very rich. Like this last year, you did the Babe anniversary, which I know people that went to it and loved it. And, and so there are fun little things along the way that happens, isn't there, apart from all the wonderful music.
Well, that's right. What we're trying to get across is that the symphony orchestra can be an experience for everyone, no matter what their tastes in music are. And so, we've got, you know, the heavy hitters, things like Strauss's Alpine Symphony and Mahler's Fifth and Sixth Symphonies, the continuation of our Mahler cycle with Sir Andrew Davis, not to be missed. We're performing lots of works that are related to Shakespeare next year because we're commemorating commemorating
That's
the
right.
400th anniversary of Shakespeare's death.
Yep.
And also another highlight would be Beethoven's grand Missa Solemnis, his solemn mass, which is a very difficult work. The first time Sir Andrew Davis has conducted it. He's already now into his 70s, and so it's pretty remarkable that this will be his first outing with it. But those are a few of the highlights for me in terms of the classical season. But of course, what we have to offer next year are some wonderful film-related experiences.
Yes, well, Brendan wants to ask you about this.
That is
yes.
what I was going to bring up. Hitchcock, of course.
Yes,
Hitchcock
absolutely.
And Herman. So why connect the two? What is that connection there?
Well, Bernard Herman, wonderful film music composer, and wrote many of the soundtracks to Hitchcock's films.
And they became so famous, didn't they, the music
yeah.
from
Yeah, like Psycho
yep.
and
yes,
exactly.
That
Vertigo.
Piece of music alone.
Yes, I know. And the writing is really incredible. It's quite challenging. And you know, of course, where would those films be without the music?
Yes.
I mean, they're incomplete without the music. The music does so much to heighten the drama and the suspense of these films. And so we're really putting music front and center. But of course, giving our audiences the opportunity to appreciate that music in relation to the wonderful imagery that the Hitchcock created for us.
And another very iconic soundtrack is, of course, The Godfather.
Yes.
Now, tell us a little bit about that as well, because that is such a marriage between image and sound as well.
Right.
But tell us a little bit how, once again, it elevates the material and what you're hoping audiences will get out of that.
Well, the Godfather concert actually will be the entire film with the orchestra performing the soundtrack on stage. So it will be essentially like going to the movies, watching the film and appreciating the incredible score of Nino Rota, one of our great film composers yep. of all time. And so you're going to see the orchestra, you're going to see, you know, what it takes to play all of these incredible soundtracks. I mean, a lot of people, I think, aren't quite aware of what goes into the preparation of recording these soundtracks, and to see a full symphony orchestra, you know, really working hard throughout the course of a, you know, 90-minute film.
Because in the day, they used to have full orchestras playing
yes.
with the film running
right.
you know, in the recording studio. That's
right.
that's how they would record it, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because they didn't have the multi-layer tracking as they do now.
Exactly.
And where, in a lot of cases nowadays, they don't actually use orchestras. They use synthesizers and whatever. But it was a really grand time, wasn't it, of
yep.
producing this music in a recording studio. And the Abbey Road Studios are famous for it, where the Beatles recorded, because a lot of them were big sound stages for the orchestras, weren't they?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, and great orchestras like the London Symphony Orchestra and the Los Angeles Philharmonic, I mean, they have recorded quite prolifically for these films. And some of our, who we perceive to be classical music composers, also wrote incredible film scores.
Yes.
So there's a lot of crossover, and I think that perhaps the 20th century will become known as the age of film in terms of music.
Yep. Yeah, it certainly has a big impact. Now, the Sydney Meyer Music Bowl, the free concerts there, they're hugely popular, aren't they?
Yes. I'm actually particularly interested in next year's Music Bowl concerts, because I'm going to be one of the featured soloists
in one
of the free concerts that we're presenting. I'll be playing the Barber Violin Concerto, which is probably one of the most lyrical of all 20th century concertos. And I've been told that about 10,000 people show
yes.
up. It's a free open-air concert, and the atmosphere is just wonderful. And so it'll be the largest audience I've ever performed for. And, I'm looking forward to it. Just hoping it won't be 45 degrees.
Oh, how tough is it performing when it is boiling hot, when you're outdoors? Because
right.
inside it's fine, because
right,
everywhere's air-conditioned now. You know, but that live and the mosquitoes flying
yeah.
around. And
no, it adds a whole nother dimension of challenges to live performance. But we do it because we love it. And sometimes when you have to overcome adversity in a performance. It's, you know, if I'm not feeling well, or, you know, you go that extra mile to serve the music.
Yeah.
And so, regardless of the conditions, I just think these concerts will be a real treat for our community. And we're going to be joined by a young, up-and-coming American conductor, Joshua Weilerstein, for those concerts. And we'll also see the wonderful guitarist duo, brothers, Slava, and his brother, his name is escaping me, Gregorian. And so they'll be joining us for a tango concert at the Bowl as well.
Fantastic. Well, look, thank you so much for coming in today. There's so much more we could talk to you about, because this orchestra gives so much to Melbourne, and you're giving so much to Melbourne. Now, just quickly, because you're not having that relationship with Vancouver anymore, because you've got something special happening. What's that?
Well, actually, it's just been announced that I'm joining the Australian String Quartet as of 2016. So after, you know, I think it'll be 18 years, I'm coming back to Australia full-time, and I'm going to be dividing my time between the Australian String Quartet and the Melbourne Symphony, which is a dream come true.
Wow. Busy boy.
Yeah. Bring it on.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having
me. And we'll see you on stage.
Sounds good.
See you in the theatre. You're on Joy 94.9. It is Sunday Arts Magazine with Brendan and David.
Joy 94.9.
And segue into the next section here on Joy 94.9. David,
yes,
thank you for not running away.
Oh, thank you for letting me stay. we've just got a lovely message. By the way, it's always nice if you leave your name as well, so we can actually say hello to you, apart from just reading your SMS. But this is a lovely one, and thank you so much. It says, David, I've just purchased tickets online from your brilliant review for my name day. Thank you. And for those who have just joined us, I was just talking about the new Gershwin musical. Nice work if you can get it. So whoever this person is, that's great. You're going to have such a wonderful time. It's a lot of fun.
It is. Now, David.
Yes.
We're on to our next interview already.
We are.
It's getting through really quickly. We are really delighted to introduce our next guest, Brett Cousins. Thank you for coming in from Red Stitch.
You're welcome, Brendan. David, how are you?
Oh, very good, thanks. Now, Brendan, we always like to get behind the person that's sitting opposite us, and Red Stitch, we know it so well, but there's a lot of people out there that might not know. You've been involved in it since day one.
Yep. Ask anything.
But just before we get there, when did a theatre get into your blood?
Oh, probably year 10 at high school, to be honest.
Okay.
I was a footy player, cricket player, sort of more sporty kind of guy. Always good, but never great. And then, you know, I thought, what are all these people doing? I went to St. Michael's Grammar School, which is very much a theatre-oriented school.
And right across the road from Red Stitch right as well.
As it turns out, I've been crossing Dandenong Road for about 30 years, I worked out. What all this fuss about theatre? And so I went and auditioned and got myself a role. I don't know, if I hadn't gotten that role, I don't know I ever would have done it, but I got bitten by the bug and sort of found my place in the world and never looked back. But that's quite late to get into acting. I'm teaching and looking at kids that are, working with kids that are in primary school, and you're like, gee, I never got serious about it back then, but some of them are pretty serious.
Well, I think it's a different era now. Everyone's focusing a little bit more on, you know, what their career path's going to be. Mm. And also, because of people like yourselves and being involved with Red Stitch, you've opened the door so much wider, haven't you, for the kids these days to sort of be aware of what's out there. And the arts are there. Our interview before was one of the principal people from the MSO. What they're doing these days is incredible. It's not the stuffy old just sitting there watching an orchestra play Beethoven. They do so much more now, don't they?
Yeah, Red Stitch are really getting out there and working at schools and, you know, doing sort of master classes. And there's a lot of drama schools that Red Stitch are affiliated with, and, you know, they're pumping out genius actors year after year after year. It's terrific.
Tell us, for those people that don't know, what is Red Stitch?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you've heard all these Red Stitch actors come in year after year, you know, talking about the new great play that's on at Red Stitch. But for those of you who don't know, it's, what's it about? It's an ensemble theatre company, which means it has a board of directors, but it's run by actors, and strategic decisions and artistic decisions are made by actors.
Right. So because you've been part of it from day one, obviously you've been very involved along this.
That's right. And it's an ensemble. And what we try to do is probably find the best plays in the world that Big hits around the world on the West End or on Broadway or off-Broadway or, you know, Ireland or Edinburgh, wherever, that perhaps aren't being done. If you walk around the West End in London, there's massive theatres with 10-foot-high neon lights of these great plays with these amazing people in them and straight plays we're talking about, you know, non-musicals. And we see a tiny fraction of those. And the ones we see may be the ones that are a bit safer, a bit easier to put on, a bit more commercially viable, done by the big companies. We can take a few more risks. So we'd like to think Red Stitch are really the company that is bringing over Australian premieres of these amazing plays from around the world and presenting them for the first time to Melbourne audiences. And along with that, over the years, we've really gained traction with our writers program called Inc. And we're also nurturing new Australian writers and experienced Australian writers and commissioning work and developing work and trying to get the best new Australian work on.
You were saying that you go out to schools and do classes, master classes and whatever. Mm-hmm. Do you also do it within the theatre so that, say, myself, for instance, or Brendan, he wants to be an actor.
Yep.
And is it your first step sometimes?
You're talking to the right man. Yeah, I run them at Red Stitch. Not very often because the space is so in demand, a little Red Stitch Theatre.
And it's so cute cinema. Too, isn't it?
It's great. Great. But we're performing a show at night, we're rehearsing during the day.
Yep.
It's very busy. I run sort of 6 to 8 classes in a clump over maybe a 6-week period. And, I work with very experienced actors and inexperienced actors. And we have an amazing time. But that's fleeting. I guess if anyone's interested, just email classes@redstitch.net and you'll be put on a wait list for when those surface. We're a bit nomadic with them.
Yeah.
But when the call goes out, we're on. And, you know, we have a chat and fill it up and it's always a terrific couple of weeks.
Now, it must be really hard for you guys with your fundings that are being cut, government fundings for the arts, and because what you're doing is so good and so critical and so important for a city like Melbourne that we've got somebody like you doing this, as you were saying, all the plays we're not seeing normally out here in Australia. How tough is it for you? You must need to fill that house every night to make it worthwhile.
We're pretty concerned at the moment. There's a lot of we're really not sure. There's a lot of insecurity and a lot of unknowns around what's happening at the moment. But we're pretty worried because we don't really fit into the mold. Because we're an ensemble, we're not a building. It's easy to fund a building.
Yep.
It's easy to fund a bureaucrat. We don't have many of them, like a marketing person or, you know, we're really an actor-driven company. So it took us many, many years to get funded through Australia Council and for other organisations to understand us. So now the idea of starting from scratch is pretty daunting. We're really worried. I mean, I guess in a more macro sense, you know, everyone likes to brag about how Melbourne's the arts capital of Australia and Australia's fantastic for its artists and, you know, so many great exports. But, you know, all that work, and you guys would know, is largely subsidised by the artists themselves with their time and energy and working for less than they should be getting.
Yep.
And so it's all very well for politicians to brag about what a terrific arts community we have here, but the artists are really the ones who are making that happen, and they're subsidising the work that's going out there. So Red Stitch are very concerned. We're not completely down in the dumps. We have lost some opportunities. We're sure of that through our existing arrangements, but there might be opportunities with these new initiatives. It's just nobody really knows yet.
Yes.
And so we don't know. So for any organisation to lose any idea of what's going to happen in their short term, financially, that's a very destabilising experience for any organisation.
Is that almost worse than, you know, either having no funding or, you know, having great funding? It's just that in between where you can't plan anything.
Yeah, I'll tell you when we find out whether it's worse or not, but it's certainly very disconcerting. And I will say in our administration area, tears have been shed. And that's not a joke. They have.
And that corporate money seemed to be drying up a bit as well, you know, corporate backers.
Yeah.
But anyone out there that doesn't take a lot to keep somebody like you guys running, so it wouldn't be like keeping a whole orchestra or something like that together. So sponsors out there, go and support them.
Yeah, we have a wonderful community around us, and it's almost a family. And, yeah, if anyone wants to join that family, we'd be more than happy to open our arms because it's a pretty special place we've got there.
Now, Let's talk about the play. We haven't hit there yet. What's it called?
It's called Detroit.
Yep.
It's by Lisa D'Amour. It's an American play.
Uh-huh.
That's
set in Detroit, or?
Well, it's a good question. It's about a lot of topics that are very prevalent in Detroit at the moment. It's called Detroit, but it's not necessarily in Detroit. And it's relevant, I think, to anyone, considering, well, you know, a lot of sort of the Western world at the moment is going through a situation where the gap between rich and poor is getting wider and wider, and it's throwing our perceptions of what it is to be a middle-class family out in a community out the window.
And is that's it set within, you know, the struggle between neighbours? Is that true?
That's right. Yeah. There's two couples. One is an established middle-class couple who have means, but they've been married since college type of thing, and they just followed the rules, and they work in banks and financial institutions, and then everything's kind of atrophied. Their marriage has gone wrong and their financial situation isn't as secure, and they're sort of going, is this it? And then this couple move in next door who are recovering drug addicts, basically. So they kind of really need each other for different reasons. You know, perhaps the more well-to-do couple have to maybe find another way and be a bit more spontaneous in their lives, and the ex-addicts need a bit of steady earth under their feet. So they form this beautiful sort of unlikely, very funny and kind of tragic friendship.
But sort of looking at it from the outset, because it hasn't started yet, I think it sounds fascinating because, as you virtually just said then, both parties can help each other in a roundabout way, and that's what's so wonderful about human beings, isn't it? If you open yourself up a little bit and...
Yeah, they're like, let's make a community. Let's be a community. Let's be neighbours like they used to be, where you know, borrow sugar off each other and all that, and where did that go, you know? And, yeah, I know Lisa talks about the idea that these couples are meeting each other right when they sort of need what the other is offering, but it doesn't all go according to plan.
Of course it doesn't. That's life, isn't it?
It's pretty sexy and pretty funny. But, of course, with like most good players, it has a really loud voice about what it's saying about the way we live, which that's what Red Stitch does. You know, we take plays that, you know, they may not be set in Australia, but they are very, very relevant to what we're doing, what we're experiencing here.
And is that the reason, you know, this play right at this point in time, was that extremely deliberate?
For the writer or for Red Stitch?
Both, I suppose.
For Red Stitch, we read it. It was a big success over off-Broadway. David Schwimmer played, you know, he was the big name in it over there.
And, gosh, that is a big name to have.
Yeah,
that would get bumps on seats, wouldn't it?
It did. And for us, you know, some plays you read and you go, is this relevant for us? Will Australian audiences respond to it? There were no questions in this, not with what's happening at the moment. With, as I said, the gap between rich and poor and that idea of trying to accumulate material wealth and, you know, how that affects the decisions you make in your life and whether for the good or bad, you know, better or worse. So, yeah, it's of its time and very pertinent, I think, at the moment.
Wonderful. Well, you've sold me, so that's a good sign.
But I get sold every time with Red Stitch. Yeah. It's always so good.
So how can people find out more about this production and get tickets, I suppose, as well?
Box office at redstitch.net. You can leave a message there, or you might get to our box office manager, but you'll be well looked after if you email them. Or you can go to ring our box office, which is 9533 8083. And again, it's not manned all the time. We don't have the budget. But again, you'll be well looked after if you call that number, 9533 8083. And redstitch.net is our website.
And it's on from the 28th of August to the 26th of September. And what's the location?
Rear 2 Chapel Street, St Kilda. So it's opposite the Astor Cinema, and there's loads of parking there too.
There is, yes. Thank you so much for coming in, and you know, keep up the fight, because we need Red Stitch.
Thank you, David, Brendan. We really appreciate it, and we really appreciate the support.
You're very welcome, and you are, of course, listening to Sunday Arts Magazine here on Joy 94.9.
Joy!
You're on Joy 94.9, Sunday Arts Magazine. It is that time of the day again to say goodbye, unfortunately. But we got a couple of lovely messages in towards the end. What
yes,
are they, David?
A delightful show, as always, gentlemen. Thank you. Love Arts and your honest reviews. Thank you so much. That is lovely. And because we do like to cover everything there as well.
We do. And we also got another message in talking about politicians and saying, unfortunately, yes, politicians using Neighbourhood Day in conservative areas, never in Melbourne. with that non-industry. But thank you so much for all your messages in. It is the end of the show, so we'll see you next week. It is time for Bassam with the news here on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.